What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
It has been 968 days since October 7th, 2023. In that time, over 75,800 Palestinians have been murdered, with the vast majority of casualties occurring in the Gaza Strip. Total deaths, healthcare authorities report over 73,700 Palestinian fatalities in Gaza and several hundred in the West Bank. More than 171,000 Palestinians injured. According to UN and independent human rights monitors, women and children make up nearly 70% of the verified casualties. Missing and under the rubble are an estimated 10,000 to 14,000 people presumed dead under destroyed buildings. We know all of those numbers are an undercount. It has been 234 days since October 10th, 2025, the last U.S. brokered so-called ceasefire. In that time, over 900 Palestinians have been murdered. It has been 93 days since the illegal attack on Iran by Israel and the United States. In that time, between 7,000 and 9,600 people have died across the Middle East since the war began on February 28, 2026, according to official government statements, human rights reports, and military sources. The death tolls vary by region. Iran, more than 3,400 to 6,000 people have died, including over 1,700 civilians. Lebanon, at least 1,800 to 3,300 people have been murdered. And Israeli airstrikes and border clashes. In Iraq, at least 117 people have been killed, including civilians and fighters. And we know that 13 U.S. service members have been killed in action or due to related hostile incidents. Hundreds more have also been killed in scattered projectile and drone strikes across the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Oman, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and the West Bank. For over 2 years now, we've spent every Monday on this show on Palestine Post, where we look at Israel's genocidal assaults, the United States support for it, and the people's resistance and its impact on the region and around the globe. Our guest this morning is Rayana El Amin, community organizer and member leader with the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. Our home is over at AROC. He teaches labor and community studies. He teaches in the Labor and Community Studies Department at the City College of San Francisco. My mouth is going to start working at any moment this morning, y'all. I promise. Monday mumbles. Good morning, Ryan. You're on mute, my dear.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us so early. All right, we're going to start with Iran. Every day or every other day, we hear Trump say we are very close to a deal. Over the weekend, he said we were close, but he's not in a hurry because being in a hurry would make him a bad negotiator. Every time we hear him say that, we hear Iranians say that his statements are not based anywhere in reality. Where do things stand for real, and given the fact that Iran, from their perspective, had already negotiated a deal, at least around nuclear capabilities with the United States, with Obama, yes, Trump's continuous moving of the needle, and the fact that strikes on both sides carry on, do you see an actual end in sight?
I mean, as of this morning, the negotiations don't look good, partly because what you had just said, Trump wants to look like he's getting a better deal from the Iranians than Obama did with the JCPOA agreement that was something that Trump tore up in his administration, his first administration. So it looks like, Trump is just playing that he's trying to get a better deal, but I don't think that's going to happen in the end. And as of like an hour ago, the Iranians have called off all negotiations. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's kind of breaking news. It's breaking news because of what's happening in Lebanon. So the Iranians have said that the attacks by Israel on Beirut, which is what Israel has announced as of last night, that they will be attacking not just southern Lebanon, which we have talked about before, and the bombing that's been happening over the last month in South Lebanon, but also in the southern suburbs of Beirut. So now the Iranians have said that unless Israel stops attacking Lebanon, that it will not negotiate. There's also an understanding that United States now wants to pressure Iran by attacking, by having Israel attack Lebanon. And obviously, Lebanon has Hezbollah, which is an ally of Iran. And so this is indirectly what the United States is doing in order to put pressure on Iran. And the consequences of that are thousands of deaths in Lebanon, the ethnic cleansing of South Lebanon. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. But Iran and the Lebanon track are now kind of all on the negotiations table with the United States.
And I had a question about Lebanon, which I'll turn to earlier than I planned, but I actually think that what you just said bears repeating because it's early in the morning and because I want to make sure that people hear it and I want to make sure that I heard you correctly. Iran has said, I'm just going to lay it all out. Iran, from jump, Iran has said, you got to end the attacks on Lebanon. From jump, Israel has continued to attack Lebanon. Escalating, deepest incursion in 26 years as of the capture, as of the over the weekend, the capture of the Beaufort Castle. I probably said that wrong. You'll correct me. U.S. says that they're trying to get to an end of the war, right? That's the mouthpiece. Did you just say though the U.S. is using Israel to attack Lebanon as a way to antagonize Iran? Did I hear? Is that what you just said?
And Rubio has kind of directly said that even though Israel has been attacking Lebanon at a escalatory way over the last couple of weeks, Rubio had who had negotiated the whatever the negotiations between Israel and Lebanon, the state of Lebanon, that said that Lebanon is not meeting the agreements and that Israel has a green light to attack Lebanon. And so this has been coming out in the news early this morning that the United States has given Israel a green light to escalate, not to, they've been bombing no matter what over the last few weeks. So what's new this morning, kind of breaking news, at least in the Arab news, which I watched early this morning, is that Iran has formally said that we will stop negotiating with the United States because the United States has allowed or given a green light for Israel to escalate in Lebanon and to bomb Beirut. And so an evacuation notice has been put out in Beirut for the Beirut southern suburbs this morning. Our morning, 7 p.m. in the evening over there. So an area the size of San Francisco is being evacuated now because it's going to be carpet bombed by Israel. And Iran has said that's a red line.
What does that mean? That's a red line.
It means that we won't negotiate under fire, so that the Iranian U.S. negotiations around the nuclear deal are have stopped as of right now. At least that's what's being said in the news. That's what's being said officially by the Iranians. Not only the foreign minister, but also others in the Iranian government.
I thank you. I'm looking at it now. They said that Tehran said that the attacks this violated the ceasefire. That so the ceasefire that happened that brokered between the United States and Iran, which by the way strikes and counterstrikes by both sides this whole time. We've never had a as long as I've been covering the region. There's never been an actual ceasefire anywhere, but Lebanon was included in the ceasefire, the so-called ceasefire between the United States and Iran.
That's a good question. So it's actually a separate ceasefire, but it's also another one of those ceasefires, as you said, where it's actually a ceasefire in one way. It's not an exchange. Hezbollah had stopped when there was a ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel, so that we don't get too confused. Israel continued to bomb Lebanon, and then Hezbollah and the Lebanese resistance responded and continued to respond. After 3 days of giving it a chance, hoping that there will be a ceasefire on Lebanon from Israel, but that doesn't happen. Israel has said many times that we will negotiate under fire. That means there is no real ceasefire. And in the types of weapons and the way that Israel carries out these, bombings, there's no way you can call it a ceasefire. They continue to bomb villages, kill first responders, kill reporters, attack displaced people where they have moved away from, the kill zone and the battlefield. So it's always been kind of a one-way ceasefire. Lebanon and the resistance is supposed to stop, but Israel continues to bomb, similar to what it's done in Palestine and what's been happening in Gaza. We saw, this is the same type of playbook. And even during these so-called ceasefires, Israel continues to demolish villages, do assassinations, and continue war as usual for them because they have the upper hand.
Thank you for that clarification between the two ceasefires. I was aware of the one between Lebanon and Israel, but I didn't realize that that's what Iran was talking about. I was listening to an interview this morning. Some of what I was going to ask you this morning is sort of blown out of the water by this latest development. But I was listening to an interview this morning, an Al Jazeera interview, Bottom Line, I think it was called. And the guest was talking about how poorly Trump had calculated this military engagement, right? That one of the points that she made was that no one in the world knew, or mostly no one knew, what the Strait of Hormuz was, where it was, or why it mattered. Now the whole world wants it open. Now people are super focused, right, on the Strait and its impacts. It's blowing up further, continuing to blow up our relationships. I shouldn't say our, because I'm not including that equation. The United States relationships with Europe, and other, world powers who also do their fair share of horrible things. But with this news, I guess that actually compounds the question. Like, it feels like the US is just continuously getting backed into a corner because it once again has underestimated the resistance, spirit, efforts, and willingness of folks in the region.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They've underestimated also Iran's ability to defend itself. And another thing that's also been reported over the weekend is that a lot of the bombing of Iran's air defenses and missile sites by the United States and Israel hasn't done what it was supposed to do, was to eliminate the threat of Iranian missiles, and specifically as a way to kind of close the Strait of Hormuz. What they would do is just, target ships if they do try to pass during this particular phase of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz. And what has been found out over the weekend was the fact that much of the missile sites have been dug back out. The missiles are being set again, the Iranian missiles, and the Iranian military is back in business in terms of its ability to defend Iran, but also to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. That's what's happening on the ground. I mean, militarily, there isn't a solution for this for the United States, and I think they know that because of the fact that Iran has this grip, economic grip on the Strait of Hormuz, and we've seen what it does to oil prices and the global economy.
Well, and as I was looking up what you were talking about, the cease negotiations, the other headline that just popped up is that Iran is threatening another crucial strait. Iran and its allies are considering the activation of other fronts, including the Bab al-Mandab Strait, in response to Israel's attacks on Lebanon, another strategic waterway that could significantly disrupt global trade and further royal, is the word that CNN has on there. It's a big word, royal oil markets, causing, right after that announcement, another sharp increase in oil prices. And I know that folks are like hyper focused on, the price at the pump. I scream every time I gotta go to the gas station too. And I think part of the conversation that's not happening enough, Ryan, is the trickle down effect.
right? So gas prices means harder to get fertilizer. Harder to get fertilizer means more expensive groceries. Groceries are expensive. SNAP benefits about today. Today is June 1st. Today the SNAP, the cuts in SNAP with the work requirements starts, right? So all of this stuff rolls medicine, critical medicine that people need. Prices for prescriptions are going up. So poor folks of color here in the United States and all over the globe are actually the ones that are going to feel this on their heads, yeah?
Absolutely. And the time it takes for prices to go back down, it's gonna take a while. That's the other part that the Trump administration is finally beginning to wake up to the fact that this is gonna take months into the midterms for prices to go back down.
Not
And
good.
hopefully working class people, people of color, people who are hurting, will make this administration pay. For the midterms, but also to try to kind of push for legislation that doesn't pour billions into the military industrial complex and take away SNAP benefits and everything else, and higher prices for regular working people. I also heard today, I mean, I think an important, it's not today, it's been going on for a while, that within one of these congressional moves in order to make sure that Israel continues to get money for its bombs, there is an attempt, and you can look this up,
I will.
it's a integration of the US and Israeli military, and it's a formal act that is going through Congress, and it's Section 224, if I can remember it properly, that
Have right.
integrates the Israeli and US military. That means there's no transparency how much money you're going to be giving to the Israeli army, because that's become unpopular within the even in Congress. They can't publicly say, I'm voting for more money for Israel. So now what Congress is doing is less transparency and integrating the US and Israeli military to coordinate on all sorts of stuff. So that even if the US citizen says no more bombs for the Israelis to kill Palestinians and Lebanese, we will use the US budget, because now we're integrated with the US military in order to continue to have bombs. And you don't have to, get that approved by Congress anymore. If this passes.
Dead air is not good on the radio, so I have to put my mouth back up and say something. I mean, I'm not smiling or laughing because it's funny. I just every time I think that I can't be further shocked by the moves of this administration, I am. And then I mean, you mentioned elections, and actually, I want to talk about Israeli elections. But you mentioned elections, and yes, hopefully, working class. I'm gonna do a live about this later today. I've been really struggling with electoral politics and what that really means for our people, and like if people are listening to what I say, what am I actually saying to them, right? Am I promising like go engage in this paradigm that wasn't built for you, is going to continue to put white supremacist boot on your head no matter who you vote for, which I guess is sort of my point. Like, yes, I hope that we make this administration pay. You know even better than I know the Democrats are just as bad, some of them high Schumer worse than Republicans on the issue of Palestine and particularly alliance with Israel. So
But
even if,
Palestine is on the ballot. I mean, that's the thing. It's become an issue. If you look at what's also, I'm not going to go into the details of what's happening now with even the congressional race for Pelosi's seat, where Scott Wiener and Connie Chang and others are taking positions around Palestine, or being made to take a position, whether they, admit that it's genocide, whether they're gonna take money from AIPAC, has become an electoral issue. In the primaries, AIPAC is pouring in billions of dollars because they're vulnerable. The Israel brand is not doing too well after genocide. After many years, people are finally waking up on the electoral level. So I'm with you in terms of what that really means in terms of real change and social justice and liberation of Palestine, but at the same time, it seems like, within even the primaries, Israel and aid to Israel is on the ballot for the midterms and for a lot of these people that are running right now for Congress or even other races. So, yeah.
So here's Cat the Skeptic again. And again, I'm not telling
Sure.
people not to, right? And so I'm just harking back to black the movement for Black Lives, Black Lives Matter. And I'm not talking about organizations, I'm talking about the movements.
Yeah.
It's annoying that those things are bound. But I'm talking about the struggle for black liberation, right? Where people were talking about defund, right? Where people had to say that they were gonna divest for cops, and then as soon as they got in there, right, all of a sudden all of that rolled back. So I guess, like I said, I'm just trying to find, I guess we find ourselves once again, us folks of color in this
Yeah, and
country,
voting
the
rights,
lesser of two evils. Again, and I guess that's my frustration
Yeah.
with it all.
I mean, even if you're able to kind of also say lesser of two evils, but now, with the gerrymandering and the stripping away of, the voting rights and civil rights, all the things that people have won over the years, sacrificed their lives in order to win, now being kind of not scaled back, but demolished, as we've seen, in Tennessee and Louisiana and other states. So I think that's going to become, and as far as the elections, is going to be one of the main issues we should be looking at.
Agreed. Speaking of elections, elections are coming up for Israel, specifically, for Netanyahu and his party. He's definitely weakened politically, right? Like, even the Zionists are mad at him. For not for the same reasons we're mad at him, but they are mad at him. But he's still like he's sort of the figurehead, right, of Israel. You think Israel, you think you see your Netanyahu. A couple of questions, I guess, here. How the if he doesn't win, who wins, and what does that mean for Palestine? Like, are we talking about replacing him with even more hardliners, people that are further to the right, or if that's possible, and I believe it is, in Israel. Or perhaps folks with a different view. And I'm doing that, and I was actually going to ask that before we start delved into US politics, but I think it's sort of the same box, right? That okay, this may be different, but is it actually going to be better? What would that actually mean if there's no Netanyahu? And is that really a possibility?
Yeah, unfortunately not. That's the short answer. And in terms of also taking away even Netanyahu, it's hard to do that. He's a pretty evil person. He's a war criminal. That the Israeli public, for example, right now, 77%, these are surveys that have been done inside Israel, 77% want Israel to intensify the killing in Lebanon. So the rightward shift of Israeli society is huge. That means even the opposition parties, Lieberman and others that are in Israel, they're going to be just as bad in terms of their politics towards Palestinians and towards Lebanese. And they're asking for more death. They're asking for more occupation. They're asking that Israeli public is asking for Netanyahu to even do more. There's a considerable part of Israeli society, because that's the Zionist state, that want Israel to do more against the Palestinians and Lebanese. I just want to kind of just also mention that part of that electoral campaign that Netanyahu is trying to compete with his opposition is creating a real concentration camp. We haven't talked about Gaza, but like Gaza has
We're
become
going to.
a concentration camp. It's a concentration camp in every way you can define a concentration camp. 2 days ago, Netanyahu has said that he'll increase the occupation up to, in Gaza, it's already a tiny strip, to 70%. He's
7%.
moving the so-called yellow line. So it's going to be 30% of Gaza where there's going to be 2 million Gazans living in that. And this moving yellow line, where it's a so-called buffer zone for Israelis. It's a killing zone for Palestinians. 452 Palestinians have been killed while approaching during the ceasefire. We're just talking about the ceasefire over the last, whatever, few months, where Palestinians have died for approaching the so-called yellow line. Now they're moving the yellow line. It's 30%
And they've
of,
been moving it.
and
Like
they've been moving it. So, and they're squeezing people in. So that's a definition of a concentration camp. They're limiting water, food, humanitarian aid. There's an accumulation of sewage, water, trash within this concentration camp. There's over 10,000 patients that are waiting to leave in order to get medical help in Palestine, in Gaza specifically, but the Rafah crossing has been closed, and no one's been doing anything. This is considered, business as usual under the so-called Board of Peace, which is supposed to be actually improving the situation for Palestinians. The other thing I just wanted to kind of mention in terms of what's happening as far as Gaza, and I know you're probably going to be talking to somebody from the flotilla group at some point, but we heard about this new UN report where Israel is being accused or putting on a blacklist or whatever you want to call that the list of sexual abuse. It's a list that includes all these countries that use rape and sexual abuse in prisons systematically, and Israel is one of those countries now. And there has been 31 verified cases, but there's going to be multiple hundreds of others probably in 12 different locations in Israel where Palestinians have been even either raped or sexually abused. We also heard the same thing happen to the flotilla activists that were caught. So it's just another thing to kind of put into the mix, and you realize that the society, the administrations, the different political groups in Israel are more right-wing, more militaristic, and rape culture now is considered, perfectly okay. Just as, when they caught soldiers that were had been raping on camera a Palestinian prisoner, they were all released. No one, was put in jail. Nothing happened because this is totally acceptable now within Israeli society. If you do it to the dehumanized Arabs, whether to your north in Lebanon or to Palestinians within Palestine.
Thank you for that, Ryan. I literally was going to say that I worry a bit that the ongoing genocide against Palestine is getting lost in all of the other headlines, and wanted to talk about Netanyahu's assertion that he's directed the IDF to take over 70% of Gaza. Of course, he's citing Hamas as the reason, saying they're tightening their grip on the resistance group. But we know that that's smoke screen there. Before I let you go, I've got two more questions. One is, you mentioned that 70 plus percent of Israelis want increased aggression in Lebanon. We saw through social media, et cetera, the narrative about Palestinians, right? That moves grossly throughout the occupying state of Israel. What is the narrative about Lebanese? Like, why would 70 plus percent of Israelis want
Yeah, that's a
increased
good
aggression in
question.
Lebanon? Like, what are they saying? What demons have they turned Lebanese civilians into?
They are defending themselves. That's what Israel can't, and that's what the Israelis can't, stand. The fact that a resistance is fighting back. So you need to make not the resistance pay the, so when Lebanese resistance fights back against Israeli aggression, and that's seen as unacceptable by Israelis. Like, how could they fire shots at us when we're firing at them? It should be a one-way thing. I mean, this is what happens in the
I'm sorry.
kind of colonized mind, right? That
Okay.
they're fighting back, and we need to make not just the resistance or the military pay, because the resistance in Lebanon is killing Israeli soldiers or fighting against the Israeli occupying forces, right? How Israel responds to Lebanon is by bombing civilians. It has leveled the 4,000-year-old city of Tyre. This is a Phoenician city with Roman ruins, Phoenician. It's been around for thousands of years, and they're just carpet bombing it right now. So that for Israelis with a supremacist type of mentality is, how could these people fight us back? We need to kind of just demoralize them. We need to eliminate anybody that supports the resistance. We need to ethnic cleanse all of their villages, which is what they're working on now in South Lebanon. And that's where that mentality comes from. You're asking me where it comes from. It comes from that, the fact that the Lebanese still are able to fight back. So Israelis want to hit them even harder.
I got to get to my next guest. I'm just behind, but I can't leave without at least giving you like 90 seconds to talk about the West Bank, where settler violence continues to increase, as does support by the IDF for that settler violence over the weekend. A group of settlers, they did a lot of things. One of the things they did was attack Palestinians on their land with the aim of stealing their sheep. And when the IDF arrived, they opened fire. And I just a quick question about the ticking of the clock, the uptick of the clock, the speed at which annexation is happening. And then an interesting turn of events is that the Israeli government is warning that some of the resolutions passed around settler rights to purchase may come into conflict with already existing IDF presence.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is also one of these things that Israel is known to do is during a time when there is kind of attacks in Gaza, where people are paying attention to everything else, the ethnic cleansing and colonization of the West Bank is increasing at a quicker pace. And also this week we heard that there will be 2,500, a big number of housing units for more settlers to move into the West Bank. The idea here is that there is bigger fish to fry in terms of human rights groups. There's like all these other war crimes, and Israel continues to colonize and displace more Palestinians in the West Bank, which I think is going to be kind of what they really want to take over. I mean, I think in Gaza, it's going to take quite a bit to kind of figure out where they're going to, it's going to take a while for things to, the dust settle there. And also in Lebanon, they're going to meet lots of resistance. But I think what they're trying to do is to kind of consolidate the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank. And the right now, the world community, the UN, whatever, the international world order is just turning a blind eye to the Palestinians as the ethnic cleansing continues to go on.
All right, Ryan, I've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll talk to you again, yes.
Thank you for having me.
We have been in conversation with Rayan Al-Amin, community organizer and member leader with the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, or AROC. He teaches in the Labor and Community Studies Department at the City College of San Francisco. That takes us to 8:41 in the morning here on Law and Disorder. I am your host, Kat Brooks, and this is Palestine Post. About 400 to 500 people from many countries participated in a convoy of 52 boats in the last global Samud flotilla, which Israel intercepted while the convoy was sailing in international waters toward Gaza, attempting to deliver humanitarian aid and break Israel's blockade. The activists were abducted and imprisoned for many days. During the detention, many of the activists were beaten, tortured, and sexually assaulted by Israeli soldiers. Reports of broken ribs and other injuries have been documented. We are joined now by Greg Terry, a sailor from Arcata, California, who participated in the last flotilla. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Greg. First things first, are you all right?
Yes, I'm. I got it relatively lightly compared to some of my comrades.
I want to start at the beginning of your journey with being an accomplice in the fight for free Palestine. When did you first learn about the genocide of Palestine? How long have you been involved in the movement?
I've been peripherally involved as a participant in marches for many years, and I grew up in a family that I was very well informed about this, but it's not till just getting into the flotilla that I really played a more active part. And the reason I chose the flotilla is because I'm a professional mariner and a sailor, and I thought I had a valuable skill to contribute to the movement. Yeah.
And you were aware when you said yes that Israel would most likely intercept the ships, yeah?
Yes, I was aware.
What conversations did you have with yourself and your family about making this choice to put your body on the line in this way?
Oh, well, I found out about the mission from a friend of mine I was working with, and I basically signed up as soon as I talked to him about it, and then told my family. yeah.
I mean, not flotilla level, but I've made moves like that with my family. They did not go over very well.
Luckily, my family was very supportive. I've had a lot of help from my girlfriend and my parents who spent the time calling representatives and making a stink on my behalf and on Palestine's behalf while I've been away.
What ship were you on and what happened?
I was on the Maryland. We evaded the first interception off Crete where the Israeli Navy came and attacked, took about 20 ships, about 650 miles from Palestine. And we carried on through that attack, through to Turkey, and then on to our final approach to Gaza. And then we were attacked again near Cyprus. And this time I was abducted along with everyone else. We were taken to a prison ship, sort of a prison that was improvised on the deck of a amphibious landing craft, an amphibious landing craft built in the United States and gifted to the Israel in 2023 or 2024. And there we were denied adequate clothing for the weather, and there wasn't enough room to sleep inside shipping containers, so a lot of us had to walk around in circles all night just trying to stay warm on the deck. We weren't given sufficient food or water. And then we were taken to Ashdod in occupied Palestine, where I was summarily beaten. I was pulled into a tent where I saw one of my comrades basically on the ground being kicked by three or four soldiers. As soon as I came in, they turned to me, beat me up for a while. Someone else got dragged in, and then they threw me out and started working on him. We were all forced into stress positions, like kneeling with our hands tightly zip tied behind our back and our faces in the ground for, I felt like maybe 3 hours, 3-4 hours. And during that time, soldiers would move through the crowd. Anyone asking for help because they couldn't feel their hands because of the zip ties were beaten and kicked. One woman was singled out in particular. I could hear her. I could see the soldiers moving over to her when she asked for help, and you know, several of them holding her down and abusing her in some way I couldn't see because I was down on the ground too. But she was screaming and screaming and screaming until her voice was hoarse, and I could hear the soldiers laughing as they did it. Yeah. And we were taken to. Through a couple hours of bureaucratic processing, and then sent to Ketziat prison in the Negev desert, where I saw the inside of several cells as we were dragged around through the prison, and they were all full of Arabic writing on the walls. A lot of the writing was arranged in ways that makes me think it was poetry, and I deeply regret not speaking Arabic because I wish I could have brought those words out, the words of the Palestinian prisoners who are trapped in Ketziat prison and who have been trapped there for decades without legal representation or trial or even a charge against them. The security services of Israel use torture and rape as a standard tactic of violence against the prisoners kept there. It's like pretty horrifying to think how close we were to those prisoners that that are being tortured there.
It's pretty horrifying to think how close you were to the people being tortured, the woman in specific, in the tent that was with you.
And once for a lot of this experience, every time you're being moved, you're being bent forward at the waist, and the soldiers have a hand on the back of your neck, forcing you to look straight down at the ground. You can't walk around unless you're looking straight at the ground. But every once in a while, they would grab your head and twist you and make you look at them right in the eyes. And what I realized when they did that, they're usually doing it just so they could say something taunting, is that all these soldiers are like 18, 19. They're kids, right? We're being tormented by children, which is kind of an added level of horror to the whole thing.
Those children will grow up.
Yeah.
They will be adults. You're a white man in America.
Yeah.
You've been taught that's supposed to give you a certain amount of privilege. Your government don't care this happened to you at
No,
all.
no. I think the experience of many of my friends and family who made calls to the State Department and to my representatives, Jared Huffman, in Congress, was that they were basically ignored. I think a lot of people actually got just kind of outright insulted by people at the State Department when they asked for assistance with my case. And our representatives in Congress, the most they did was send out a tweet. Jared Heffman sent out a tweet. Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff were silent. They are taking thousands and thousands, if not millions of dollars from the Israel lobby, so that's not super surprising. But I think a lot of people in my circle really learned firsthand how totally bought and paid for by Israel our government is, and how they do not exist to actually serve us, the American people. They exist to serve the interests of the American ruling class and the Israeli ruling class that has paid for their elections. I also, going into this, I knew that I had some level of protection from being a white American, and carrying that passport. There's a political cost for each punch that the IOF throws at me, right? And nevertheless, they still beat me up pretty good. I saw many of my comrades with broken arms, broken ribs, concussions. I've heard about more than a dozen counts of sexual assault, including rape, during the second interception. Right, that was all done in spite of those political consequences and the political costs of hurting us, right? In Gaza, there are millions of people who don't have that same protection, who don't have a powerful, wealthy government behind them, who don't have authorities that the Israeli government needs to impress behind them. Imagine what they're willing to do to those people in Gaza every day. Imagine what they are doing right now while they are continuing to expand their military presence in Gaza, whether they're continuing to bomb Gaza in spite of the false ceasefire.
We don't have to imagine. We cover that on the show every Monday. This coverage has been part of Palestine Post. Greg, I want to thank you for your work. I want to thank you for coming on the show and spending some minutes with us this morning. You take good care.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
We have been speaking to Greg Terry, a sailor who was on the most recent Global Samud Flotilla.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.